Hey there, I'm Vicki Howell. Welcome to the Crafters Podcast, episode 31. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Makers Mercantile. Makers Mercantile is a space for fueling your creativity, inspiring you to make using any medium that you feel passionate about. So whether you're a knitter, crocheter, sewist, dyer, weaver, or really just all-around creative type, Makers Mercantile has all of the supplies and inspiration you need to get started on your next project. And for Craftish listeners, they've got a special discount code, so you can head on over to makersmercantile.com and use code VICKIE10, that's V-I-C-K-I-E and then the number 10, for 10% off your next purchase. So this week is actually our first week back for 2017. We took about a month break for the holidays, but now I'm thrilled to be back in my little audible world of inspiration. I'm really excited for the lineup of upcoming guests, which span creative passions ranging from knitting and quilting to floral design and general craft to spoken word performance and fiction novel writing. I'm truly looking forward to hearing about, and then of course sharing with you, how each of these amazing artists have found their own creative paths. In today's episode, we kick things off with lifestyle blogger and author of DIY Woven Art, Rachel Denbo. Rachel's a creative skills teacher, weaver, and home decor expert. She's been featured in the likes of HGTV Magazine, Apartment Therapy, Design Sponge, and writes regular features for A Beautiful Mess. I'd never met Rachel before this interview, but within minutes, I felt like I was chatting with an old friend from the industry. We talked to her about her evolving aesthetic, her urge to create daily, what she does to feel connected with other makers, and what it's like balancing a career with a family and home life. Let's go ahead and meet Rachel now. Rachel Denbo, thank you so much for being on Craftish. I wanted to dive in right away and talk to you a little bit about blogging. I was struck by something that you wrote on your blog, and I just wanted to read it really quickly.
Sure.
Talking about blogging, you say that it offers connections during time of transition and often times of isolation, but also challenges me to be a better wife, mom, friend, and creative soul. It yes. drives me. It scratches an itch. It nourishes something important. It assists my family financially. It lets me document our family life in ways that I might not do otherwise. I love all of the ways that it allows me to combine all of the things that I love into something that challenges me and fulfills me. We talk a lot about all of the things that we do blog about and about how, and many women that have been on this podcast have talked about how fundamentally just the aspect of having a blog sort of ended up pioneering a new career for them, but mm-hmm. not as much about the actual like genesis of creativity from blogging itself. So I'd love if you'd start just talking a little bit about that.
I feel like if I'd gone to college and they were like, you can get a degree in blogging and that can be your job, I would have been like, what's that? I don't understand. No, I'm going to go with something safe. But then it's been about 10 years since I have been blogging. It started off doing stuff with scrapbooking, and it has since evolved into all the other creative interests that I have. And there have been opportunities show up because this whole generation of bloggers have made a job for themselves. And there's been, you know, the internet in general has just allowed us all to connect and share in ways that we might not have been able to, either as a student studying something that we felt was safe and we didn't have the connections with other creatives, or as a stay-at-home mom who doesn't get out very much and have time to explore the other creative parts of her community, or just generally someone who loves the fact that they love to make things, but they didn't know they were going to be good at something because they don't have that experience with others. And so I feel like blogging has just kind of been this platform for being able to explore those things and learn from other people and expand in ways you didn't know was possible. And it's just led to so many opportunities for me.
Where were you at when you started this blog in 2007? Were you working on something else? Were you a new mom? Like, what was the sort of genesis of your blog?
I was a new mom. My son was about 4 months old, and we had just moved from Seattle, Washington, back to California. We had moved back in with my parents. It was kind of the whole start of the, we were apartment managers, and they sold it to turn into condos, and we found ourselves in this, like, what are we going to do now moment. So we moved back in with my family, and I discover blogging because it's like I'm at home all day now and I have this new son, and what am I going to do? I feel like I need some outlet so I don't feel, you know, trapped in this new life that I haven't figured out yet.
Yeah.
And so I was, I've been good friends with Elsie Larson for years, and she was working with, I'm not sure the company, but she was doing her own scrapbooking line. And so
and
she
asked. Elsie Larson is one of the founders of the blog, A Beautiful Mess.
Yes.
Yes.
And she asked me to be on her creative design team. And so I was able to start scrapbooking, and it was kind of a very small paid gig. But it kind of opened me up to the whole, that's what got me into blogging. I didn't really understand what it was before that point. And then I had this subscription kit that I ran. So I had to learn about how to advertise through Flickr, because this was pre-Twitter, pre-Instagram. Facebook was kind of newish then, but I don't think people were really using it for business as much.
I think it was probably still MySpace at that point.
Yeah, yeah. And so just learning a lot kind of about what my interests were and how I could try to turn that into also financial opportunities to help with our transition of, we just lost our jobs, now we're living with my family, and we don't want to do this forever, so what can we do? While also valuing my role as a mom and wanting to be at home with my son. So that's kind of how things started, and in that sense morphed into selling things on Etsy, vintage things on Etsy, and DIY posts that I would contribute to A Beautiful Mess. And then we started creating e-courses that were project-based, and that was really great for a while. And that has since kind of morphed into more skill set e-courses. And so now it's just kind of, it's given me ways to explore things that I never, I mean, I don't really scrapbook as much anymore, but now I'm, you know, being creative is like a lifestyle. And as far as like scratching that itch, it has kept me, it has helped me thrive in personal areas where if I had just kind of done the stay at home mom thing and kind of surrendered to, well, this is it now, I wouldn't be the person that I am. You know, it was kind of my life raft to becoming the best version of me instead of just being this one side of me that I thought that was it.
Mm-hmm. Back then, they didn't call them lifestyle blogs. They were craft blogs, mommy blogs. Mm-hmm. What were you calling your blog at that point? Not literally the name, but what type of blog were you calling
it? I think it was a craft blog, but it had that mommy element.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, you know, 5 ways to entertain your toddler at home kind of a blog. It was more of like, this is what we did today, and these are pictures of my kid and what he's doing. But it was so much more like organic. It was not written with the intent of how many people can I get interested in this. You know, it was just, I want to share this part because I learned from other blogs that we're all in this together, and I'm not the only one not getting any sleep at night. And you know, it was just so much more of a sharing, connecting kind of
sense of community. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't think that there was the pressure to have everything look sort of like magazine ready.
Yeah.
There was now. I mean, absolutely. I almost cringe going back to look at some of my stuff. I don't know if you, but it's, you know, like we still had flip phones. So we were still, you know, taking these like darkly lit photos. There wasn't Color Story by A Beautiful Mess apps on your phone. Where,
oh, I know. Yeah. There was like definitely much less like styling involved, and making sure your kid's face was clean was about as far as it went, you know, like,
but and at even the same time, I mean, does that lend itself more or less to creativity, that pressure, that sort of like internet competitiveness that I think that really all of us in and out of the audience or industry may, you know, if we're being honest with ourselves as we stroll through Instagram and Pinterest, we all kind of have.
I think you have to ask yourself, like, does this serve me? Does this make me feel better? Does this inspire me? Does this make me want to keep my house clean all the time because I want to take photos of a clean house? Or does this make me feel like nothing in my house is ever good enough? Right. And so just having to look at, okay, this kind of pressure needs to motivate me or inspire me. If it starts to feel yucky, I need to reevaluate, because it is a lot of pressure to always feel like every shot has to be something that makes people excited. Well, sometimes you just really want to share a moment, and you don't really care about, you know, how, if it fits your brand or if it fits your color story in your Instagram feed. So I think you just kind of have to strike a balance of maybe a little bit of both. Or sometimes I know people separate personal accounts versus their, you know, if they have a small business they're promoting through mm-hmm. Instagram and Facebook. I think Instagram stories has been great for,
yeah, for ugly stuff
sharing. So, yeah. It's just kind of put a little, that real yeah. touch in there. So I do recognize that pressure and that feeling of like wanting to do it for yourself, and also wanting to expand your vision of like, what do you want this social media space to do for you?
Yeah.
Is it a place where you want to connect with other people, or is it a place where you're trying to like put yourself out there? And, I think there's just that, yeah, you just have to get reflective about it sometimes.
How much has working with A Beautiful Mess affected your own aesthetic, or have you affected theirs?
I feel like Elsie and Emma have been kind of like, Elsie is such a dreamer and a visionary as far as like trends and embracing new things and always evolving in her style. And Emma's really great at the business end of things and like making all those pieces work together and casting out like, how's our business going to grow in the next 5 years? And I am so much more of like a facilitator and just let me see how I can make this happen. Change is hard for me. And so like being such good friends with them and being a part of their business has really helped me not stay in like a stagnant place. So I think they've for sure influenced my style, but in like really good ways. Challenged me to try something new. And I think I was really into vintage and like mid-century, probably about 5 years ago. And I can see where my styles and tastes have changed and shifted towards a more, I don't want to say Palm Springs, because we live in Missouri and we live in a Victorian home. Mm-hmm. And so there's this element of like, I love old stuff. I love industrial, but I love light colors, and pink is my BFF forever in all shades, and, you know, white walls. And, so yeah, I think it's been kind of, you grow up with something and you're so closely tied to something. It does seep into your aesthetic.
And I how feel much really, of that white walls thing though, do you think has to do with photography?
Oh, everything.
Cause we, our old house, we had all kinds of like mid-century colors going on, and now it's like white, cause I'm going to have to take a picture around it sometime.
Absolutely. Yeah. But at the same time, our house right now, it has like, we rent. And so it's a beautiful Victorian home that was redone, by the man that lives here. But all of our walls are like a muted light gray, and it just kind of feels like shadowy. And every day of my life, I'm like, I'm just going to paint now and ask forgiveness later. Yeah. white walls, they just make me happy. I don't know, that light. But yeah, I feel like, how long is this trend going to be? You know, there's always a cycle.
Sure. Everything's going goth after this.
Yeah.
Like there's only going to be black and white filters, photo filters. That's it.
Exactly. Exactly. Everyone's going to have like navy and dark green walls. And
now you're going too far.
Too far. Sorry.
So what did you work in any form of like creative business before, like in the life pre 2007?
I went to school for teaching English as a second language, and I planned on going overseas and possibly forever and just working and teaching English. And I took Chinese in high school. I took Mandarin, and just really, I mean, kind of out of left field, started nannying after I graduated college. And then started working with Elsie on some art journaling projects just for fun. And we'd go to some music festivals in the summertime and bring all of our handmade clothing that we'd come up with. And it was more of just like the side thing until I figured out what I really wanted to do while I waited for my husband to take an extra year to graduate. And so I did that. I taught in Seattle to Korean students and to international students who'd come over for college and want to, you know, practice their English. And then it kind of switched over to creative gigs that pieced together and then morphed into like, okay, this is my job. I'm going to be a creative skills teacher. I didn't know this was a thing. So
you've said that you have a really strong urge to create on a daily basis. At that point, did you still have that urge? I mean, before, and is teaching language fulfilling in a creative way in ways that we may not think of off the top of our heads?
I knew growing up that I just wanted to be of service. Like, I wanted my job in life to be something that helped other people. And whether that looked like, you know, something that could project their futures into a much better, you know, career-wise, whatever. I just knew I wanted to do something to serve others and not just make a ton of money. And so that kind of changed a little bit. But, you know, over the years, from English to creative skill teaching. But like as a kid, I was always doing like picking up metal things out of the street and collecting them in a shoebox under my bed. And like my mom was always like, what do you have all this stuff for? You know, and she's very creative too. And so she was always like making Christmas gifts for our family members. And my grandma used to sew all their clothing when they were in high school. So it's kind of just always been in my environment that I can do things for myself. I can make things out of stuff. And, you know, we didn't have a lot of money growing up. And so we were pretty resourceful. My mom made all my dresses through junior high when I went through that awkward body stage. Mm-hmm. And that just, those things stuck with me. It's like, if I don't see what I want or I can't afford what I want, I can make it myself. And so that's kind of like been one of those guiding principles throughout my adult life as well.
You know, it's interesting because a lot of us in the creative realm, you know, one of the things that fascinates me about these conversations is how we sort of all find each other in the same circle, but how different many of our paths are. And one of the things that I have found that there seems to be sort of subsets of are people who were raised by artists or were artists as children. They went to art school. There's a through line, or people, I think maybe a little bit more like you and I, who came from families that didn't have any money, but who had, you know, were raised by parents that really like the ultimate DIYers that were like, you know what, like you can just do it yourself. Like just make it happen for yourself, whether it's, you know, wearing homemade clothes or it's just making opportunities happen for ourselves. And it's the latter that I always feel like, even when I'm feeling, you know, just speaking personally, even when I'm feeling maybe frustrated with my own creative abilities, I do feel like I feel a huge advantage over people who weren't maybe forced to be creative, because you have to be creative to make things happen for yourselves when you don't have opportunities.
Yeah. You get to be resourceful. Just you have to be and to move to a place where you're feeling good about the next chapter. It's like you just learning resourcefulness goes such a long way.
When did you start scrapbooking? Was that part of your travels?
I think it was like in high school or college, like back in the day when you ripped out things out of magazines, like pre-Pinterest, I would do a lot of that. And then, you know, I kept a journal. I actually made leather journals in college and sold them to all my friends. And so just that idea of like documenting life was kind of there. And then scrapbooking just became one of those, oh, I have a kid now. What am I to do? You know, I don't want to just do a baby album or baby book. So let's make it fun and use paper and stickers. And I mean, not stickers traditionally, but, and so, yeah, that was never something that was like my passion. It was just more of like a means to an end.
Have you dove into the whole like pretty planner thing now?
You know, I have seen that. It's been on my peripheral vision, but I haven't really figured that out yet. I have a planner, but I haven't gotten creative with it. It's just me and my pen. So do you do that?
I bought one.
Yeah.
I bought a Bando one, and yeah, it's cute and I like it, but it's funny. I was just at TNNA, which is it's an industry conference for needle arts. And I was talking, and a shop owner called me over because we were holding the same binder. Well, mine, I mean, it's scribbled everywhere because I do actually like writing things down, even if I have it on my Google calendar or whatever. But hers were like, she opened up a week and she had like TNNA and these beautiful like mint and like off pink stickers. And then there's like an airplane drone. And I was just like, oh, is that what you're supposed to do? But when do you do that? When does that happen? So I like it. An idea. I mean, ideally I like it. I just don't, it just doesn't feel as realistic, but
yeah. Well, and you know, and when I think back about certain, and people ask me all the time, like my husband even will be like, I can't believe you spend so much time on one wall hanging. I would never be able to do that. And I realize, like, if there's no joy in it, then, you know, of course, why would you spend 5 to 10 hours sitting and working on one thing? But if that's what you love, you know, that's the only thing you want to do all day long. And I think even with the crafty planners, it's the same thing. I'm like, I don't have time to do it pretty. I just need to like get all the information there and not forget everything. But if that's like what floats your boat, it's like, well, why don't you do this? It's right. Just so funny. You know, we all have our things, and I love that there's so many resources out there for whatever floats somebody's boat. Man, knitting. I tried knitting a hat this weekend on Friday night.
Did you? Was it pink?
It was pink. Mm-hmm. It was. And there was a deadline for why I needed to make my hat. Mm-hmm. But you know, I read the instructions wrong or something. It was going to be like twice the size that it was supposed to. And I was like, this is going to take me 6 more hours to finish. And I know it's not supposed to take that long. Why would anybody knit a hat that takes you 10 hours to make? And so I wove one instead.
There are a lot of hats that take 10 hours to make.
Oh my gosh.
But I digress. Oh, you wove one.
I wove a hat instead because it's like, I'm going to make one of these, whether it kills me or not, but I know how to do this. And it was, you know, it was not a hat I'm going to wear every day for the rest of my life, but it worked and it fulfilled the purpose. And I felt really good that I could, you know, it took me like an hour and a half, and I want to love knitting. I love all the things you can do with it. But at the same time, it's like, there's just part of me still, there's like a wall there that it's like, and so it's so, I love that there's just certain mediums and certain crafts that there's so many out there for people to pick and choose, like what fulfills that, that creative need to make something with our hands.
Well, I would like to delve further in than I already have into weaving. So maybe we could do some kind of like crafty personal skill share.
Yes.
Meetup or something.
Yeah. That would be so fun.
When I read somewhere that you are a self-taught weaver. When did you go from paper crafts to weaving, and why weaving of all of the fiber crafts?
Well, I am proud to be an almost Girl Scout. I was a brownie before, and I got my Girl Scout badge, but then I like ditched it because I got into sports. So technically I started weaving in like fourth grade, you know, the loom that was the size of the coaster. Mm-hmm. But fast forward 2013, I was 6 months pregnant with my third child. It was winter. I was just so out of creative inspiration, and it was the beginning of the new year, and I was like, okay, what can I do to get out of this funk? I need something. And my friend Elise, she blogs at elisebloghawkripe.com. She is really good about like, try something new, jumpstart, give yourself a new project. And so I was kind of inspired by her to try something I hadn't done in a while. And so I got an old, something I found in an alley. It was a drawer out of somebody's discarded cabinets. And I nailed across the top and bottom and just used stuff I had on hand, like twine and rope, and kind of just like remembered what I knew. from Girl Scout days and made my first wall hanging. And it was not cute, but it was like, oh, this is fun. Let's make another one. And so then I made a clutch, and then I just went big and I did like this DIY rag rug for A Beautiful Mess.
Oh, that's a leap.
It was a big one. Like, let's just go for this. And it was, I mean, I up until a week ago, I still had it. I mean, that was 3 years ago. My daughter accidentally got wood glue all over it, so we had to recycle that thing. But
yeah,
then it just kind of evolved from there. So I think it was just like needing a new creative outlet. I'd been doing DIYs. I'd been sewing. And I just wanted to try something exciting and fresh. And it really challenges you when you start something new to think about all of the rules and how you can break them, you know, and how you can make it your own. So it kind of went from there. And then I was just really fortunate to be able to write some DIYs for A Beautiful Mess that were, you know, intro to weaving. And from those posts being so popular, was invited by Interweave to be an author of that book, DIY Woven Art. And it was one of those like pinch me moments, like, yeah, bucket list moments, and it's such a pleasure. And I'm really proud of how the book turned out and the opportunities it's given me since then. I've been teaching workshops all throughout the Midwest. I'm going to be going to Chicago in May, have one in Dallas, St. Louis. And so it's kind of one of those, I've since opened up a little bit of a supplies tool workshop, tool fiber pack shop where I work with a local craftsman to offer looms and toolkits for beginning weavers. So I'm kind of just trying to expand from this place of, this is my new favorite thing and it's going to be here for a while. So let's make this as fun as it can be.
Right. And so then you've obviously taken a step back and thought of not only that this is your new thing, but if you're looking at expanding and creating products and stuff, that this is your new business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of e-courses and teaching through e-courses have been kind of my way of providing financially for my family while being at home. And so this has kind of taken on a life of its own with, okay, now we're going to do some more e-courses, but let's sell products and tools and make those connections for seeing what might happen next. And so, yeah, this is it. And I'm kind of talking with another gal about another side project having to do with fibers and dyeing them and subscription kit possibly, and kind of looking into all of the options out there.
Man, when you get that subscription kit thing figured out, you have to let me know. I'm on that same kick. Like, I need to have something that's actually mine that I can send my newsletter out and there's a reason, yes, for people to click on.
Yeah.
And that monthly thing is really, it seems where like it's at right now.
A great business model right, yeah, now. Yeah.
It also seems completely overwhelming, the execution of every month.
Yes. Oh my goodness. I got to work with the Crafters Box, which is a new, it's been about a year now that they've been in business. And each month they offer a new kit that you get designed by some really great artists with tools that you need. And then there's like a workshop you can watch to create this cool product that you'd probably pay $60 to $100 for at a boutique.
Yeah.
And each month it's something new and different. And it's been so fun to get to contribute to that once and then also receive some of their early boxes to help promote it, because I've made like a wood cutting board. I dyed some yarn with some madder root the other day, and I've done an arm knit blanket.
Yeah.
What else was there?
How fun. I hadn't heard of that company before. So it's called the Crafters Box. And are you shooting, did you shoot the video to go along with your kit?
I didn't. I mean, Morgan Spindler is the gal that started it all. So she worked with a company to shoot those videos. And so we all flew out to San Diego and had like a crafters retreat weekend. And like, mm-hmm, seven of us all shot our videos over the weekend. And then they got staggered each month. A new one gets released. So it was great working with the production team to see how much energy goes into filming that kind of stuff.
Yeah, what a great experience. It's kind of like tactical training for what you want to do next level. You've said that that sitting at your loom makes you feel more connected with other makers. Mm-hmm. Did you feel that way having to be at your loom under the time constructs and the pressures of writing a book? And do you also feel, were you able to feel at that point, or are you now able to feel sort of like the gift you've given to the community by creating something that will enable others to feel like they're a part of it?
Absolutely. I feel like just respecting the tradition of weaving and how it has served women for generations through, you know, clothing their family and, you know, speaking to their children about their cultural values, all the ways that it was used. And then just in the modern setting, all the women that are designing anything through fiber arts. There's so many ways that people get their hands on weaving, and to be able to have the opportunity to take all that in and feel how overwhelming that feels, and the chance to put something of my own out there, even though I haven't been, I never went to I don't have a fine arts degree. I never went to school or was trained for this, but I can still contribute something, and I can still express myself in the same way all these other women have done. And getting to share that with people who are not yet aware that weaving is their new favorite thing too, or just showing people how to think about how colors go together, or being the one that gets to introduce them to how to use certain tools, does feel like a great honor and a way to bring other women into this fold of like, isn't this fun? And, you know, isn't this fulfilling? It feels like there's such a community out there, and one that I'm often inspired by.
Your book, DIY Woven Art, has such a clear aesthetic. Very much in the scape of what we were talking about earlier, what you're into, you know, with really nice clear white and then some beautiful clear pop colors. For somebody who hasn't been trained in art, you have a very clear vision. Is this just something that you developed on your own through experience, or were you, like the rest of us, so highly inspired by what you see in people's Instagram feeds and on Pinterest and blogs and elsewhere?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think I know what I like, and I know what speaks to me when I'm pairing certain colors. And if it just doesn't feel good, I'm not going to keep doing it. And so I think it's helped me to really focus in on my viewpoint color wise. Working with brands like A Beautiful Mess and realizing how important it is to stick to a color story and stick to strong visuals has been so educational as well. And knowing like how to make this like a visual treat for people, instead of just teaching a skill, like I want to make it pretty. I want to make it something that feels exciting. So, I think it's a mix of both. I feel like I do consume every day so much inspiration on social media. And so it's hard not to be influenced by the trends. And, but then at the same time, there's so many different trends that are out there that it's easy for me to stick to this one. Cause I know like this is, these are colors I have in my home. These are colors I have in my wardrobe.
Yeah. And what about some of the, you've got a lot of geometric shapes, which I know, you know, weaving lends itself to, but are any of these shapes that you've chosen, you've mentioned in bios before and just in blog posts that you've always been drawn to objects and pieces of art that tell a story. Mm-hmm. Are there stories told with the designs that you choose? Some of them look almost like they might be inspired by Southwestern influences. Mm-hmm. Are you trying to tell a story? Is there a story in mind when you're weaving these pieces?
I wish I could say there was a deep, meaningful story for each one. I think some of them, like when I'm working on collections, you know, certain elements in my own personal life will creep into the colors or the designs. Like you can just tell some can feel a little bit more moody or cheerful than others. There's one piece I made that's really different from the other ones that I've done. And I still have it here in my studio. It's kind of got this plum and hot pink and taupe feeling. And it almost looks like, I can't think of the artist, the Rothko. I don't know if it is.
Rothko is just like straight lines, like saturated color.
Yeah, but like kind of, it was in a Mad Men episode. Okay, I think that might be it. But it's very, I think it was inspired by that like large abstract color blocking.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yes, okay. So I made this piece and it was kind of it was a hard time of the year. I had kind of gone through some things, or our family had gone through some things, and I was just needing to work through going to see a counselor and possibly thinking about ways that I could help with self-care and taking care of myself. And this piece just kind of felt like this dark, moody weaving that came out of it. Some things that, you know, feel a little too personal to share about it, but it was a really meaningful piece for me. And that kind of broke me into that whole like, oh, okay, I get this now. Like things you see in museums and galleries, and there's this huge story behind it. And it just makes a piece so much more meaningful when you know those stories. There are elements of that in my work. There are also times when I just really want to make something that feels happy and peaceful and serene and has a good aesthetic and is like well balanced and well composed. And so there is a mix of both. I do have a Native American heritage on my mom's side, and it's Choctaw. So it's not like Navajo. I feel very inspired by Navajo patterns and symbols. But there is that kind of respect for Native American art and traditions that probably has seeped into it somehow. But yeah,
go ahead. Seems like, over the past, really only like the past 3 years, 3 to 5 years, that weaving has really, or this newer wave of weaving has really blown up. Like you can't open an Anthropology catalog or a Target catalog or a beautiful, or go on a, you know, a gorgeous blog or go whatever without seeing at least one in the background. It's styled with it. What do you think? What do you think it is about weaving that is seeing its sort of new day?
I feel like just there's this movement towards organic, textural, handmade. I think people just are really appreciating like handcrafted, one-of-a-kind pieces, and they want to fill their homes with things that feel authentic. And so some of those may be more authentic than others. Like Nate Burke is okay. He's got some stuff in Target and it's cool and it's pretty. You know, some people can afford different levels of authentic. But I do feel like people are sharing more of their homes and they really desire beautiful places and textural things you want to reach out and touch. And even like the macrame, macrame's back, you know, and it's probably going to be back for a little bit too. I think macrame and weaving have probably cycled through about the same time. They were really popular in the 70s and 60s, and you know, they're kind of coming back again and people are putting a fresh modern spin on them. I don't know. I'm kind of excited to see how long it lasts and like what might be next and how weaving fiber arts are always going to be around, obviously, but just the trends that weaving itself, the micro trends that will happen out of the next 3 to 5 years, and how much weaving will be different in 3 to 5 years than it was 4 years ago. So it's exciting to see.
Yeah. And I really like the sort of like small nods to modernization that we're seeing in weaving. And some of it is just by some of the materials that maybe would not have been available in the 70s. But some of them are in like you sent me the greatest little sort of like kit, weaving kit.
Yeah.
That was gorgeous with all the fibers. But what I loved is that you had a loom laser cut, like a tiny loom, but the pieces that go with the loom were also laser cut in them. So you just push them out like you would, you know, paper doll or something like that.
Yes. And those are from Jay Villa Workshop, and she's got a full line of them. And I love that laser cutting technology, like you said, it made it so accessible. You didn't have to have this huge thing. It was just one little piece, and they're all like a little puzzle piece. You pop out, and then you've got your loom.
But it's cut with lasers, so it feels like we're crafting in the future.
Future craft.
But I just love that. I love the. I just spoke to a quilter named Libs Elliott, who's going to be also on this podcast, and she uses a processing code, digital code, to translate her patterns into what become quilts. And I love, to me, that's what's so exciting about, that's one of the things that's so exciting about being in the arts and craft industry at this time, are just the watching fellow men and women embrace like traditional crafts, but then voyaging forward to see, okay, what can we do to step it up or to keep it relevant so that people that have certain preconceived notions about crafting will now take notice.
Yes.
And see it as relevant.
I have another friend, Sonora Handmade. She makes acrylic looms that are laser cut, and they're beautiful, like just on their own, sitting on your table. You can have this clear acrylic loom, and she does a few different colors. But it's just like even the tools are like little works of art. And that would not have been possible 10 years ago, or at least the ability to get your hands on it for your own personal business would not have been at a good price point
right
10 years ago. So I love how people are using technologies that are available now to take it to the next level.
But honestly, even the technology to be able to sell it to people wasn't available.
Yes.
So, I mean, when I had my first craft-based business, tiny business, when I first became a mom, you had to have a PO box where people could send checks.
Yeah.
If you were going to take credit cards, it was like a $250 credit card banking account that you had to have, which if you're a stay-at-home mom and you're just kind of trying this out, is a commitment. Uh-huh. There was no PayPal, there was no Etsy, so you couldn't just take a picture with your phone and then upload it. Like it was a commitment. So it's so exciting to see how not only can these crafts be made more accessible because you can make all of the materials in such sort of like new and fun and easier ways, but also just being able to provide and create a business using them is more accessible.
Yeah, the overhead is so much lower.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to have a brick and mortar. You don't have to like send over a batch of 100 to a bunch of shops. You can just, you can just make up small batches and sell those as they go. And it's incredible. I think it really has changed the way, the small business works.
I mean, the flip side of that is that there's, obviously way more competition than there was before when there weren't all of these other aspects. And so you just have to, have your game on a little bit.
Yeah. Well, and I love that there's so many resources out there for like how to build your small business from $100 or like, 10 ways to get your newsletter out there, just Pinterest and all other social media aspects. It's like we're creating all this information for ourselves so that we can all get better at it together. And it's just a matter of like, how do I want to use my skill and talent? Do I want to go this route? Okay. Look at all of these resources that are available, even like Skillshare. It's like, I don't know how to craft a newsletter. Well, I just signed up for Skillshare and then I can learn how to do that. I can also learn how to use Photoshop to create a GIF, and I can also, figure out how to take better photos. And it's incredible what's available.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost like there's the ability now to, I mean, not almost, it is. We can crowdsource information. It's like it's one big wiki, that
exactly.
We're all participating in, which is really, really fun. You said that you had a foundation of the desire to be an educator, and now you're working or have been working on e-courses. Is that something that you see as being a really strong part of your business and something that you'll do a lot more of in the future?
Absolutely. I think that passive income helps me to be able to try new things and still have time to give to like actually making my own products. If I was just to sit down and try to weave something every day, I probably wouldn't have enough time to put into that according to like what our needs are financially. And so e-courses have been great for meeting new people and getting good feedback and making the next one better. And you get all this work done and then it's out there for a good 1 to 3 to 5 years, depending on the availability of, or the interest levels. So I think that I think I try to even tell all my friends who are creative and that have a specific skill, like, you need to do an e-course, because they really are a great way to, keep earning on the side.
Do you find that the experience you got teaching in a formal classroom, ESL courses, applies at all to teaching online where you do not have a physical classroom and it's just you and a camera, or do they feel very different to you?
Absolutely. I mean, we had to learn how to lesson plan. We had to learn about curriculum. We had to learn about breaking everything down and not assuming anything about what the student might or might not know about what you're trying to teach. And so I think that background just gave me this blueprint for thinking, learning how to think the way that somebody new to something is going to, how they're going to be receptive, and not to overload them with all of this information, but break it down into bite-sized pieces, and how to build on past knowledge. And so, and you know, just how to make it fun too. And approachable. So I do think that was something that I learned in my younger years that was just like a piece of the puzzle to bringing me to being a teacher and using those skills in a different format.
Well, you've done a beautiful job with this book. It's been on my shelf for a few months now, and I'm just dying to like corner out some time to play with it. Your vision is so clear, and the fact that you are backing it up with sharing your skills through classes is just lovely, and I can't wait to delve into it more. Thank you so much for spending the time sharing it and your history and the story of your journey with us.
It was such a treat. Thank you.
For more information on Rachel, some of the things we mentioned in the episode, as well as to see pictures of her gorgeous wall hangings, please check out her show notes page at vickihowell.com/craftish. And while you're there, let us know what you do to feel connected to other makers, whether it's physically making yourself or, you know, scrolling through your Instagram feed or jumping on your favorite crafty board. We just want to know what you do to feel like you're part of the overall collective. So all of those comments that we get will act as entries to win a copy of Rachel's book, DIY Woven Art, and it's a really gorgeous book, so you want to go ahead and try and do that. Entries must be received by 10 p.m. Central on Wednesday, February 1st. Thanks again to our sponsor, Makers Mercantile, who would like to give Craftish listeners 10% off site-wide. If you're like me and a new year inspires embarking on new crafty projects, well, you're going to need some stuff to make that happen. So just go over to makersmercantile.com and use code Vicky10 at checkout. Craftish is a Camp Bell production. It's produced in Austin, Texas by me and mixed and edited by Dave Campbell. Music is provided by Explosions in the Sky. Thank you so much for coming back and listening to the beginning of the second season of Craftish. If you're digging what you hear, then please share it with a friend. Word of mouth means everything in the podcast realm. And if you wanted to go over to iTunes and take a moment to just click on those star ratings or write us a review, that helps even more because it also helps people find us. So thank you in advance. We really appreciate it. On next week's episode of Craftish, my guest will be digital code quilt artist, Liz Elliott. That episode will go live on Thursday. Until then, take a moment to maybe tear yourself away from political strife talk on social media just for a minute, and then give yourself those minutes to paint a few strokes, strum a few notes, or maybe knit a few stitches. Breathe in, craft out.